Chair Gene Sperling.
Hi, if everybody could take their seat, we're going to get started. We're going to start by just doing three commitments right away. And I'm going to ask our moderator to actually come up so that she can help present them as well. Our moderator today doesn't need a lot of introduction. Maria Bartiromo is what, closing bell. She is probably the most famous and well-known face of finance on TV. And I have to say, had she bowed out of this commitment in light of everything going on today, I would have understood. But she is a woman of her word, and we really appreciate her being here. So Pam Flaherty, the president and CEO of Citi Foundation and director of corporate citizenship, and Denise Glynn Borders, senior vice president, group director of the U.S. Education Workforce Development at AED, one of my great partners. This is a commitment by Citigroup and AED, and it's called the Citi's Building Bridges to College and Career Initiatives, improve the long-term earning potential of 56,000 low-income and first-generation students in the United States by enhancing their access to and success in higher education and technical certification programs. Thank you, and here. Our second commitment is a person who I have to say I would be very tempted if we had a fifth seat to put him up, which is Taddy Bletcher, because he has been director of the Maharishi Institute, co-director of the Empowerment Fund. I guess what I just want to say about him is his commitment is to provide free education to 2,700 additional young people a year from disadvantaged backgrounds in effort to develop well-educated leaders within South Africa, build on the success of their first free university by developing two new programs that will enable at-risk youth to reintegrate the educational system, launch a holistic self-sustained curriculum, and a world-class eco-campus for Southern Africa. And the reason why he fits so well is that what he really has been doing is making sure that there is an affordable and strategy for allowing young people in Africa to reach the vocational, the business, the education training way. And so a lot of what we're going to talk about today, Taddy has very much been a pioneer of. So very happy to have you. Oops. And he has his own cheering crowd, which is really, wow, if we could start getting competitions for cheering crowds for the commitments. The last commitment before we start is Satyan Mishra, the managing director of the Drishti Foundation. And their commitment is to provide educational opportunities to underserved villages in South Asia and Africa in an effort to help such communities have access to gainful employment opportunities in India, Rwanda, Egypt, and Sudan. It will deliver courses including English, computer literacy, as well as vocational training to 2 million rural households or 10 million individuals in India, Rwanda, Egypt, and Sudan, as I said, and will establish rural outsourcing centers that will provide employment opportunities to train professionals. So we really have a commitment level that fits very much the spirit of the panel that we're about to start. Thank you very much. And I give everybody who just got their picture permission to just crop me out and just have the picture of you and Maria. I will not be hurt. Can we have our panelists introduced so that we can start? Or should I?
Please do, Gene. Thank you. Please welcome our moderator, anchor for CNBC, Maria Bartiromo. Our first panelist, Zareen Aziz. Peter Bamkole, Director of the Enterprise Development Services. Marita Reutz, Co-Director and Founder of Scientific Roots. And Dina Powell, Managing Director, Head of Global Corporate Engagement, Goldman and Sachs and Company.
Thank you very, very much. I'll just say a word about each of our panelists and then turn it over to Maria. As I've said a couple of times before, this is really one of the most exciting areas, and I've been actually a bit of disclosure, say privileged to have been working with Dean at Goldman Sachs on their really rather path-breaking effort to do 10,000 women business education. And I have learned an enormous amount, but I've also had a chance to see some of the outcomes by video, by meeting with people, and it's been incredibly inspiring. Dina runs that effort as the head of corporate engagement at Goldman Sachs. She joined the firm as a managing director of 2007. She served as assistant to the president in the White House and assistant secretary of state for educational and cultural affairs and deputy undersecretary for public diplomacy. Their CEO, Lloyd Blankfein, once said to me, can you imagine finding a better person to run your 10,000 women's initiative than Dina Powell? And I can't, actually. So thank you very much for being here. One of the people who probably brought this to life and one of the recipients of that is Peter Bamcole. That I had to like ask what his name was because as Dina likes to say, in this area, he's kind of like Madonna. He just goes by Banke. So I was like, wow, does he have a first name? Banke is the runs the Enterprise Development Services Center of the Pan-African University in Nigeria. And if you want to see, like Taddy, somebody who is already making it happen, it is really, really inspiring. As director of the center, he's responsible for the overall program, building capacity and support services to small and medium enterprises and entrepreneurs. I've watched tape of him teaching his courses, and it made me want to leave my job and go start a small business. So I will very much looking forward to hearing him. And then Marita Roots is the scientist by training and co-director and founder of Scientific Roots. And we just, as we were reviewing, we were just so impressed and fascinated by what she was doing. We had to bring her here. They focus on the development projects that emphasize job creation, value-adding, gender, resource, and information access, and training to an indigenous resource and knowledge, and really, again, shows a different variation, but again, with the same theme of empowerment and job creation and global shared prosperity. And our fourth panelist is Zareen Aziz, who is the president of the First Women Bank in Pakistan. And she's the president, CEO, chairman of First Women Bank Limited. She is a banker par excellence and mission-driven leader for the empowerment of women. I'll let her tell more about herself, but I will be honest. We showed this panel, and the president said to us, why don't you have anybody from Pakistan? And I thought, well, geez, that's a tough request. And in about 20 minutes on the internet, we spent about two days checking out, and we thought, okay, well, this is one time we're getting back to President Clinton with good news. So we are very, very happy. Again, I'm very excited that Maria is doing the closing bell with the Clinton Global Initiative today. She's the host and managing editor of the Wall Street Journal Report with Maria Bartiromo, and says recently rated the most watched financial news program in America, and that was before our entire financial market was tanking. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to you, Maria.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. We're going to talk up here for about 25, 30 minutes, and then we're going to send it to you in the audience to talk amongst yourselves on the table so that you'll give us even more fodder to talk about. I thought we would kick it off with a status check. Give us a sense of where we are in terms of microfinance, business education, when it comes to women in the emerging economies. Dina, can you kick us off on that?
Thank you so much, Maria. I'm really delighted to be here, and I do have to correct Gene Sperling on one point, if you don't mind, Maria, which is I love how Gene says that he works with us on this initiative. You know, I cannot tell you the impact that he had on Goldman Sachs making this announcement and such a significant commitment, actually the largest investment in one philanthropic area that to date for the firm. And it was really because he found that so much great work had been done on the microfinance level, which all of us have seen firsthand as being transformative. And then on the other side of the spectrum, the elites were, you know, certainly growing large enterprises. But what was an open space, white space to some extent, is what Bankey is working on, which is management education that really leads women to growing their small and medium-sized enterprises. And I think we just keep hearing over and over again, even this morning from the two presidential candidates, talking about how we'll never really reach development goals without making sure that you have a new generation of entrepreneurs. So I really did want to thank Gene so much for what he has done to get us to this point. You know, it's funny that you said, where are we at this moment? We were just at the UN with the Secretary General, with the Prime Minister of Denmark, Rasmussen, and they had all of the heads of state assembled that are in town, and the topic was empowering women, or MDG3. And Milan Verveer was with us, the founder of Vital Voices, and she went up to my boss, Lloyd Blankfein, who was speaking, and she said, a new day has come for this issue. It really is the moment when the development minds have absolutely shown it's just now indisputable. When you educate a girl, when you educate a woman, you are absolutely making social impact towards all of the Millennium Development Goals, whether it's maternal mortality, reducing HIV infection, more educated, more healthy families. And what Milan was saying to Lloyd was, and now we're so glad that more and more in the private sector are also seeing what a smart economic investment this is. That, as Bob Zelick has said over and over again, investing in women is just smart economics. It just makes sense. And I think it's absolutely the moment now where people are realizing this is a wise investment that really will, I think, help us reach all of these goals. And I'll just say that what we talked about was how we got to this specific initiative, 10,000 Women, which is going to be investing $100 million over the next 5 years to not only give 10,000 scholarships to women around the world in management education, but also leave behind a real legacy of a higher quality management education with all of these schools. And really, besides Gene's very significant intervention, it was also that research at Goldman Sachs found in a piece called Women Hold Up Half the Sky that more women entering the labor force in the emerging countries, what we like to call BRICS and Next 11, actually makes an impact on GDP growth. And business leaders all over the world care about that.
So you're saying BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Peter, where is the most progress being done right now? And I'd like to get everybody's take on where we need to go next. What needs to be done?
From our perspective, I think we placed a lot of emphasis on microfinance, which is very good and is actually helping people to alleviate poverty. But from the studies that we have done, and again, it's checkable across the globe, that not more than 15% of those at the micro level actually get to the SME level. And the SME level is actually the missing middle. And these are the people that are the real through engines of growth. We've paid a lot of lip service to small and medium-scale businesses across the world. But I think more and more people now, especially with this commitment from Goldman Sachs, they are demonstrating that until we are able to attack that missing middle, we will not really get the GDP growth that we need across the globe. And I'm happy that we're beginning to do that.
Zareen, do you agree with that?
You know, I've been a banker for 29 years and very much involved in the empowerment of women since 1982. And sometimes I find it very painful that in 1982 I talked about lack of access to credit, finance, a lack of access to the policy makers, lack of business education. And one of the issues that really is something that we all need together to look into it is because of lack of access to the policymakers and lack of linkage between the statisticians, numerators, and the financial sector, that we find the invisibility of women. As such, women work is given no computed value. And those are the factors that the underdeveloping countries and the emerging economies of the world suffer from. Women's Bank was set up in 1989 as an affirmative action for the women of the country. It was set up by Benazir Bhutto. And the most important impact that the bank has been able to make is micro and the SME women. Because the model of the bank believes that a micro borrower is a potential SME and a corporate client. But more than access to credit, what is critical are the business support services that you're able to provide to these women. And that's where we remodify the model to give skill management, business management, which is training in negotiating skills, legal awareness, and that is where we added on new products. For example, the most important product that I launched in my capacity as the president was my 11 years experience, how women excelled in business, and yet at a certain point, the businesses collapsed. We have so many wonderful gentlemen saying here, but, you know, there was always a third man to hoodwink a woman because of critical factors, which was lack of legal awareness, lack of awareness about her property rights. It was because she did not know enough that her businesses collapsed. And that is where we played a role. And I'm very proud to say that over a period of 8 years, we've been able to disperse the highest number of amount of loans of approximately 7.2 billion loans to 22,000 new business enterprises. And what's women is so honest, recovery rate is 99.8%.
Right. So, so it really is an education issue.
Absolutely.
As Dina was saying, really as the underlying problem or opportunity. Marie, do you agree with that?
The, what's really interesting in what we're seeing is it's not that you have to actually target women. In the rural areas where we work, most of the people left in the rural areas are women because we have a large mining sector, we have urban centers, and the men leave, and they leave behind the woman. And what we're finding is they start tiny. They're doing backyard poultry, or they're sewing dresses for their neighbors. And that's the sort of businesses they're running to get income for themselves and often to support extended families, because these older women, very often, their children have left the cities, or we have a very very serious HIV/AIDS problem in South Africa. So they have that middle generation is gone, and they're looking after five, six, seven grandchildren, one woman. And these women know how to do their product, but they're just looking for that little bit extra, just to take them over that edge where they, instead of just making five dresses a year, they could be making 50 dresses a year, improving their income. And what's interesting about women as well is it's not all about themselves. They often want to create a more sophisticated business to give their sisters or their neighbors active engagement also. So it's the fascinating thing about women and women entrepreneurship is there's this ripple effect. You know, men, you can draw generalizations, but women look after their communities and after their villages. When they're looking after themselves, they're also looking after all these extended families and these other people.
So there's a different culture when it comes to women versus men, is what you're saying?
There's definitely a ripple effect where you think as a service provider you're helping one woman. Meantime, you're helping 10, 20 people standing behind her.
In fact, our experience working on the 10,000 Women Project is that for every single woman that we have that has been on the program, they go back like on Sundays to their churches and they teach other women who could not make it to the program. Some are devoting their time to teaching the youth wing in the church. So you'll see that for every woman that you teach, even at the church level, they are actually affecting at least 50 more.
If I may, can I just also, one thing that I've also, and Peter and I spoke about this before we came on, it's one thing to provide microfinance, and if we look at the session title, it's about beyond microfinance. And what I found in my program is that very few people actually approach us for assistance with finance. They want to have better technical skills. They want more business information regarding where could they find a market, what's a market linkage, how should I package my product, should I package my product, those type of contracts, how should I go into this legal contract. And what I think maybe we've moved on from pure finance as a model to push ladies into business or to help ladies into business, where they're looking for the other things now, the things that will keep them going.
So what are the most important things that we need to see in order to break some of the barriers? Zareen, can you tell us about the barriers you faced when first starting the bank, when you were up against probably long-standing mentalities of, you know, women shouldn't be doing this, or, you know, or perhaps obviously the availability of legal education, the education in terms of starting a business?
As a woman, you know, one of the main reasons that I came here and I made it real fast and quick is because somewhere down the line, you know, the typical image of Pakistan as suicide bombers and terrorists, and I wanted to just, you know, get across that 95% of the people are ordinary people like me. You know, we are not women in whales or chains. We face the discrimination that maybe any woman would, but I think I was lucky enough to have a father who believed in my education more than he believed in the education of his own sons. And I think that that was the kind of atmosphere or a society that I was brought up in. But yes, as being part of the banking industry and the corporate world, I think the journey of the bank, my journey and the journey of the bank were very similar, in the sense that the bank suffered a major loss in 1996. We just blew the equity away. And there were speculative forex deals. So when I was interviewed for the presidentship in 2001 by Mr. Shaukat Aziz, I was given 18 months. And I was told, prove that the bank is financially viable or we are going to put up the bank on the block for privatization. And the most important thing that I did was put a business plan together. The bank was making no money. And so I was, the one faith that I had was I believed in the model of the bank. There was not a flicker of mind in my mind. And the force behind the statement that was the passion behind it was the mission statement that we developed, which was transforming the status of women from passive beneficiaries of social services to dynamic agents of change. And the business plan was right on target, and within a period of 18 months, the financial and the operational turnaround took place. And more than anything, I don't talk, you know, that's what I've said, that results have no gender. And as a woman, that was what I had to see, that I had to do away with the shackles of when you are looking for protection under the garb of charity, of social welfare. And as a woman, that is what I say to other women. We need to move away from those concepts. We have to learn to help ourselves, and that will only come from education, education, and education alone. But today what I say is there is a transition that has taken place when we talk about business education. We're talking about business management. We're talking about bookkeeping and accounts. We're talking about negotiating skills. How do you teach a woman to negotiate the right price for the right product? I've been having examples. One of the top film producers in Pakistan, and she started with a loan of $1,500, and she finally came to me for a corporate loan. She produced a film which was a blockbuster hit. It made something like 50 million rupees, and it was one agreement which blew her product away. And she made no money out of that movie. The distributors ripped her apart. It's 10 years now. She's still fighting in the court. And that's where my product of the financial services desk came.
Well, this the education issue, I mean, by the way, we can actually make an analogy to people who have the most Western and the most wonderful access to capital, you know, here today. I mean, the other day, my sister called me, who's a nurse in Connecticut, and said to me, Maria, is the financial sector okay? I mean, what about my money in the bank? And I said to her, well, where is your money? Which bank? And she said, I don't know. I said, what? So, Dina, tell us what kind of barriers are out there and how we can overcome them for people like, you know, Zarina's talking about and these mentalities that are longstanding in place and the ability to not get hoodwinked the way you're talking about.
Well, I definitely think one of the things that we have seen is how much we take for granted, Maria, you know, like the example of your sister, how the basics of running a business, the basics of protecting yourself are so key, and it's what Banky focuses so much on. You know, when we went to Lagos in July to visit Banky with a group from the firm, and we were just amazed. Some of the women had been in the program about 6 weeks, and they were telling us stories about how they had these small businesses. They actually were very talented because to get into the program, they had to really show they had wonderful products, they had passion, they had drive. But they were literally taking shoe boxes full of their receipts and their personnel charts and going to the bank and trying to get loans. And they couldn't understand why the banks were saying, you know, you don't exactly qualify. We need to see a business plan. We need to see how you're going to really manage this over the long term. Those same women, Banky, the day we were there, had private equity investors in Lagos coming to see them because they had written business plans, they had shown how they were going to really access and manage this capital, and their products really spoke for themselves. So the basics are extraordinary. But I would love to just tell one little story because I think Sakina Yakubi is here from Afghanistan and the Afghan Institute for Learning because the multiplier effect. I just have to tell you one story. We have gotten to know so many wonderful women that are fighting against all barriers, Maria, that you can imagine in Afghanistan that make even Lagos traffic look pretty easy. But there's this one woman who has a company in the most conservative province in Afghanistan, Bamiyan. It's called Kandahar Treasures, where she goes and actually has women make beautiful handicrafts in their homes. They're still not allowed to leave their homes in the conservative provinces. She sells the products and returns the proceeds to the women. On a recent trip to the little village, a woman stopped her at the door and said, I've just got to tell you something. Even my making this little amount of money has begun a path with my husband where now he's actually showing me respect. And the other day he said, I guess I should ask your opinion about things since you must have some value. And he said, you know, we have three daughters, and as you know, I don't believe in educating girls. But there are all these girls' schools now coming up in the province. What do you think? And she was so clever, just like a woman would be. She said, well, what value are they to you like this? We're just going to have to keep feeding them, clothing them, paying for them to be married off. If you educate them, perhaps they can be of value to you. And he said, yeah, that's right. They're not worth anything now. We should educate them. And she grabbed Rangina's hand and she said, you see, even this little bit of money is going to help me transform the future of my daughters' lives and their daughters' and sons' lives. And Rangina said, money is power everywhere, even this little bit.
Great story.
Actually, let me latch on that because it's the same scenario we are seeing in most developing countries. When you empower the woman, you are changing the dynamics of decision-making process in the family. Although that is good because it empowers the woman, and because we know that the woman will affect the society, the children, and the health and all that, but it's also raising a different set of problems. The men folks sometimes are now challenged because they no longer have the final say, just like the same example she gave. So we are now having to reorient the men to be able to accept the new responsibility that education brings to the women folk, and how empowering them, yes, will change the dynamics in the family, but that it's always for a positive reason. And so the outcome or the success of that empowerment We must do it in such a way that the men don't feel threatened. And they see that outcome as a shared success. That way, then that education is total. So I don't want us to, again, leave this sitting by imagining that empowering women and all that is good. It's fantastic. But we must take it together if we want to achieve the final goal. Now, one thing I would like to just quickly mention is that business and management education, what it tends to do, not for women alone, but for everybody, is that it raises the horizon of the player. I've seen in my 5 years of working with small and medium-scale businesses, I've seen a lot of creative people, but they remain as a marginal player. Why? Because they cannot see the horizon. It's so short, they're so short-sighted. And what our program does is to raise that level of the horizon. And then you make them believe and to see beyond whatever they can dream. So that way, you are able to positively impact. And just as I've said before, that microfinance is good and is helping people to move beyond poverty, we need to raise a network of new generation of SMEs that will see beyond their noses and be able to positively contribute to the GDP of their respective countries.
I just would like to raise a question. When we look at, we've talked about it's time to look at the men having a different perspective. And a thought that I would like to leave is, I think we also need a new set of rules for SME women. And that is where we need a more coordinated effort between the government and the regulatory authority. Because we've got to understand that an SME man, for example, in the SME sector, is going to have a different set of rules that he will have. For example, rules and needs. For example, an SME client is somebody that you finance to an extent of rupees 70 million when it comes to Pakistani rupees. But where my own experience with women is that for an SME women entrepreneur, the amount should be lesser. It should be 35 million. So I think that is something when we're talking about a linkage between the policymakers, it's also got to be the government and the regulator.
Absolutely, Marita.
The one thing that we've also found is men tend to be single entrepreneurs. Women like to work in groups. And that's actually also being supported by legislation in South Africa that is supporting the cooperative development drive. And that creates a new opportunity because if you look at your formal markets, you have to have consistency of supply of product, you have to have a consistent quality of product, and you cannot necessarily, in a small-scale setting, provide the quantity and quality of product through one person or one venture. And what we're doing in our company is we're actually, people approach us and say, can you help us? We have this idea. And then we build on that in their villages and between villages within a certain geographic area, building small co-ops up and get them to be contract producers or contract growers for an infrastructure. And that's the next thing I want to say, is that microfinance is one thing, but very often, and especially now with the food crisis happening in the world and the riots we've seen and food prices going up also in developing countries, and trying to get people to get back into food production in a big way, if we want to access global small-scale farmers to access global markets, we have to have the right arrangements, legal arrangements, definitely, but also get them to produce en masse. But then you need the right processing infrastructure in place.
Right.
So our company, for example, has done several abattoirs, meat processing plants, tanneries, and these types of things. Then the products can actually go back to the villages. For example, the one project we have, Umzimvubu, it's a lovely project. Go look it up on the internet. The leather actually then goes back to the villages where women sit in their homes and make the most incredible leather craft. So there's you just got to get the right arrangements going. And it's all about contracts. What can you expect from the previous part of the value chain, and what can you expect going forward? So infrastructure really becomes important if you want to start helping large groups of people move.
Sure.
Maria, I just wanted to make one last point, or Zainab Selby and Milan Verveer would kick us off the stage if we don't highlight the mentoring and networking piece. And that is such a key piece of what Bankey's doing, of what we're trying to do. And when I heard you say the groups of entrepreneurs and how women work together, you know, we have seen over and over again in so many studies that men naturally network and work with each other and send each other business, but women don't have that natural mechanism. And so when you look at what Vital Voices and Women for Women International have been seeking to do, you can literally connect people. We see that you're literally connecting people, from Africa to New York, who are helping review business plans, who are virtually mentoring, and then actually in the country. And I don't know, Bankey, if you wanted to talk a minute about how you've gotten the Nigerian business women to mentor the women there, because it is so important that that all of us realize there really is a pipeline of services necessary for an SME. It's not just the education, it's the continuity of the mentoring and the networking and the career development that is so vital and really where you create the best businesses.
In fact, the truth is that education is just like 25, maybe 30% of the business in class. The real education goes outside the classroom. And mentoring is a major component of that. And, people are inspired to do even more when they can connect with people within their environment and also, like we've seen with this project, on the internet. One final one that really excited me happened last week when we were in London for the announcements of the 10,000 women. And one of the women came with me to London, and she is a fashion designer. And her mentor actually happens to be a top shot in Goldman Sachs in London. And she crunches, securities and all those hard nuts. But in the evening, she actually talks fashion designing. And that, according to her, was very refreshing. And before we left London, she put together a fashion show for this lady. That was awesome for me. That connectivity beyond the business, the personal, the psychological, the leaning on people, that helps to grow the businesses, especially for women.
Well, the mentoring certainly does inspire the confidence that's needed to go forward. We are going to send it over to you in the audience to talk at your tables to tell us what needs to be done. Gene.
Yeah, I would just say I'm going to go right off that because and it goes really to a comment Zareen started with, which is a lot of times if you see something that says beyond microfinance, it's a kind of about how do you get a pool of financing. And I think you started with the notion that if you're not educated on the leadership, if you're not educated on how to get financing, your legal rights, et cetera. So let me take that and put that question. What are the various shades of education and broadly, not just in the room, mentoring, legal rights, et cetera. What are the different shades of mentoring, or excuse me, shades of education that are needed to help women who may not have an MBA, who will not have an MBA, take things to the next level? And, you can always, again, think about, as I said, the last one. It can be a little bit of a what did we miss? What else should we be hitting more, or what that was mentioned here should be stressed even more. So this is one I encourage you to take broader, but with a focus on education, but broadly put. So I know it's been a long, long day, but hopefully we have some table conversation and then come back and hear just a little bit more from our panelists before we free you. Thank you.
Honey, you had me at hello. I just said that in front of the mic. Thank you.
That's a good point. What exactly is that? Always nice to see you. Always nice to see you.